Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, November 21st, 2010. I'm Sam Minter. I have Yvonne Bo with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello. Aloha. Oh, no, that's the wrong word. Not aloha. What's the... No.
Well, aloha is both...
Yeah, no, aloha goodbye. Works both ways, right?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Never.
You can say aloha.
Okay, so I was right.
You know, yeah, okay. All right. It makes me, you know, have you taken a surprise trip to Hawaii this week?
Well, not this week. I mean, I have been to Hawaii, but not this week.
Not this week. Last week, maybe.
No. No. The only time I've been to Hawaii was about 2 or 3 years ago. 3 years ago. It was 2007.
You know, one of the interesting things about being here on the West Coast is that Hawaii is actually, like, just as close as the East Coast, essentially, to us. You know.
Yes, it is. A lot of people.
When
I went there, most of the people I saw there were visitors from definitely the West Coast of the United States.
It's a lot cheaper to get there from here than it is from New York or probably Miami. I don't know. I haven't looked at the prices in forever, but I remember
just to give you a perspective, when I flew from here to Hawaii, it took me, I believe it was about 11 hours.
Yeah.
So it's quite a trek.
Whereas it's not that far from here, as long as you don't try to do it by swimming or something.
That would be accurate, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So let me give folks an idea about what we're going to be talking about today, and then we can get started. We are going to revisit the whole thing with the good old TSA and our friendly pat-downs and other things. We're going to talk about Windows turning 25 from the original release of Windows 1.0. And we'll talk a little bit about the Pope made some comments about under certain circumstances, it may be okay to use a condom, generally involving male prostitutes.
Fucking idiot.
Anyway, and then we're going to talk a little bit. Facebook announced some stuff they were doing with email this week. And there might be some interesting things to mention there. So that's the plan. So let's get started with the TSA stuff.
Let me ask you, before we go on, does anything interesting you did this week? Because before I started this, I am right now in the middle of a stupid thing I'm doing with my computer right now, in which I have no laptop right now, basically, because, I don't know, I decided to try to upgrade the hard drive on my on my MacBook Pro, okay? And, you know, I did the same thing that I have done many times before, which is there is a way in Disk Utility to copy your current hard drive to the new one. Just do a restore and then just pop that drive into the machine and then boot it up. Well, this time it didn't work. Okay, I put the machine, fired up the, you know, switched the hard drive, fired it up, and it came up with a, you know, with a cross on it that it just didn't like the boot up drive. And right now I've been struggling to do that. The other thing I discovered, by the way, to my dismay, is that my MacBook Pro, which I bought the first generation one, will only accept 2 gigabytes of RAM, maximum.
Right. Yes, yes.
Yeah, and I bought, I did not pay enough attention to what all the sites said.
You bought more memory before checking this out. Okay.
Oh, yes, I did. Okay, and I put it in, and the fucking machine didn't boot up, and then I went and reread to where I went and I looked it up to stuff, and it actually clearly there right there said that my model machine did not take more than 2 gigs of RAM, which I'm kind of shocked, to be honest with you.
Hey, it's old enough. That was a lot back then.
I guess so. I mean, I'm like, you know, it is about to turn 5 years old, so I guess, okay. Yeah, you know. So anyway, I'm in the middle of my little, like, mission over here, which right now, as of now, has not been very successful, unfortunately.
So, you asked about interesting things over here. I only got a couple, really. One, your story reminds me of one of them, which is last night, you know, my work laptop. I got it out and opened the thing up, and it started going click, 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 and I'm like, that sound is never good.
No, not good.
That sound
is
never good. And so then it wouldn't come back from sleep, so I did a force restart. It went click, 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 and then the little folder with the question mark came up on it. You know, for those of you who don't know, on a Mac, that means it basically can't find the hard drive. I'm like, oh crap, you know, this is going to be it. I'm like, I've been relatively good about saving stuff on my network, but, you know. So then, you know, on a whim, I hit the computer with my fist. Oh.
Okay. Well, and, that's a strategy. Okay. Yes.
And then it booted up perfectly.
Oh, that's great.
And so, but you know, I'm not an idiot here. I know it's probably going to fail again. So I grabbed a flash drive and copied everything important off the computer onto the flash drive. So now I'm
okay.
Like, it can fail whenever it wants. I'll take it into, you know, the IT people at work and have them, you know, do whatever, replace the hard drive, give me a new computer, whatever they feel like. I'll be honest, I'd prefer the new computer route, but, you know, you know, I figure, you know, one of the dilemmas I have at this point is whether to go directly to IT first thing Monday morning and say, look, this happened, do something because it's going to fail at any moment. Knowing that, you know, that's basically going to put me out of commission for a good part of Monday. Or wait for it to fail again and be religious about saving everything.
Do it on Monday, and I'll tell you why to do it this week. Because, you know, with the Thanksgiving week, it's probably going to be slower than any other week to do this. Okay?
So
I would suggest to do it now, because if you try to do it after the Thanksgiving holiday, whatever, you guys probably be busy to the yin yang with shit going on. So I would suggest that this is probably the best days to do it.
Yeah, probably. I guess so. Yeah. So I'll take it in Monday morning and see what they do for me. But it's a pain in the ass whenever this kind of stuff happens. I am glad I got it to boot up, you know, a second time, so I could pull all my stuff on it. Because, you know, this is one of the things where, you know, I try to be good. I mail myself stuff. I save some stuff on the network. But like, When push came to shove, and I went and looked for the stuff that was like, okay, what do I need to save off this computer that I would be pissed if it disappeared? There was a decent amount of it. You know, it wasn't like nothing. You know, there were a bunch. There's like some Word documents I've been working on, some Excel spreadsheets I've been working on, some mail archives that I'd filled up my quota, so I'd saved them locally. You know, there's a bunch of stuff, and so like, you know, if it had gone poof, I would, in fact, have been semi-screwed. You know, I mean, so, you know, just a reminder to everybody that, you know, there are two things. Either, basically, bottom line, anything that matters should never be in only one place. Ever. Ever, ever, ever. You should have it in, you know, on several computers, on some backup drives. If you can back it up into the cloud somewhere, even better. You know, bottom line is anything that matters, anything that would make you even the remotely bit sad, if it disappeared and went poof, should never, ever, ever be in only one place. And, you know, that's something that I've tried to be good at, but even I am, yeah, this made me realize I haven't been as good as I should be. And it's important, you know, because hard drives fail. You know, laptops get lost or stolen or smashed. You know, same thing with, you know, iPads and iPhones and whatever electronic devices. And for that matter, a good old-fashioned physical stuff. If you have, like, pictures in, like, a little picture book that you keep on a shelf somewhere and your house burns down, they're gone. You know, anything that matters needs to be in multiple places. Anyway.
I do have two backups of what's on my laptop. I mean, so I am covered from that.
Let me ask, are all the backups physically in one place?
No. I'll digress. There are three, because I have almost all of my email, actually, aside from a local copy. I also have a copy over at online as well. And so now of other stuff. Actually, no. I have backups of like my content. Yeah, I have backups not just here locally, but also remotely as well. So I'm very covered in multiple.
Yeah, and on my home computer, there are a number of services like this. I use something called Backblaze. It's like $5 a month per computer, and it does the remote backup thing of your hard drive and it seems to be working fine. You know, I have a slow enough connection. It has a little bit of a hard time keeping up with how much stuff I have and change, but you know, it does okay, and you know, it gives that little extra bit of security. And is, I guess, is Carbonite, Mosey, or some of the competitors. They're good services. If you don't have one of those, I'd recommend giving one of them a shot. And they're better than they were a few years ago. They do, of course, depend on you having a nice big fat pipe to the internet to really do what you need to do. Anyway, we've managed to burn up our first segment, and so we're going to take a break. We'll be back and actually start talking about TSA in a moment. We'll be right back.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classics celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, hello, we are here. Very excited.
Headquarters. Wrong connection.
The TSA thing has continued to blow up since we spoke about it last week. There have been a number of horror stories. Kids having bad experience, people with medical issues having bad experiences. There was a woman who was who had to remove her prosthetic breast that she'd had after reconstruction from breast cancer surgery. There was a man who had bladder cancer and had an external urine bag, whatever they're called, and the TSA folks broke the connection for that while they were patting him down, even though he pleaded with them to be careful. And so, you know, he ended up soaked in urine, and they made him go ahead and get on his plane anyway, and he couldn't clean up until after he was on the plane and after the plane had taken off.
For crying out loud. Okay.
A number of things like this are going on, and we have several sort of pilots organizations recommending that their pilots refuse both the scanning and the pat downs. We've got a loose organization on the internet trying to organize a sort of protest day this Wednesday, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, for people to all opt out of the scanning and go for the groping instead, as sort of a protest thing. And who knows how many people will actually do it, but only a small number actually have to in order to cause delays. Although I've also read reports that, at a couple airports where people have already done this kind of thing, where they've had several people in a row decide to opt out, you know, after the third or fourth person, they've just started telling people, just go on through, without either, going through the older machines instead. So, who knows what's going to happen here. And then we had President Obama weigh in just yesterday, saying that, you know, he understands why people are upset, but they're going to stick with this, and it's necessary. So that's where we are, I guess.
I don't know. I'm having been somebody who's gone through all this airport security rigmarole a bazillion times. I don't know. We are inconveniencing and created so much trouble in order to catch the mega outlier, okay? And the problem is that, it's like, how many car bombs, truck bombs, and things go off in the world, on a regular basis? And it's like, it's almost the same thing as, people die every day a bazillion times more at a higher rate in a car accidents than they do, say, in any air accidents. But however, every time that something has to do with an airplane, okay, it's like, everybody flips out. Give an example. But remember, for example, Oklahoma City bombing, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It was a truck bomb that got parked with packed of explosives in front of a federal building. You know, blew up a whole fucking building. Could have been far more dead people than there were. Fortunately, there weren't. Okay. I mean, you know, did we go insane now and search every fucking car going into the city?
Well, no.
I mean, they did, the first time they tried to knock down fucking, you know, the World Trade Center, they did it with a fucking truck full of explosives that they parked downstairs in the fucking place, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, they didn't get that much damage. But they may have, though, if they were, you know. And I'm like, we're not doing anywhere nearly the insanity of this that we're trying to do with air travel now. I mean, it's gone to an extent that it's just ridiculous.
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, the thing with Oklahoma City, it was fairly early on. There were, like, we did some things after that. Like, that's when all of the they started closing streets in front of these places and putting those big concrete blocks to keep people from driving up on
right.
and all that kind of
right.
stuff. And you know,
sure.
And frankly, at the time, you know, even that was it was somewhat like, really? But, you know, in comparison to the stuff we've done later, you know, it's nothing. But, you know, that's the problem with these kinds of things, though. You always build on what was already there. You never take anything away. So it's a ratcheting effect. It gets worse and
right.
worse and worse and worse. One article I'd recommend to folks, I sent Ivan a link earlier in the week, is Nate Silver, the guy who does 538, the election analysis stuff, also did something on the costs of airport security. The hidden costs of airport security is the name of the article, actually.
Mm-hmm.
538 is
sure.
now part of the New York Times, for folks who don't know. So it's 538.blogs.nytimes.com. And this was posted on November 18th. But, you know, he does a lot of calculations and shows a bunch of stuff in terms of, you know, some of the costs of this in terms of, you know, both economic costs and then costs in lives. And, you know, I've mentioned this before in terms of, you know, A, there's just the lost time that eventually adds up to lost lives, but also more concretely, there's the people who decide to drive instead. And a number of people have done calculations. Apparently, there was a study done at Cornell that Nate Silver mentions that basically the number of people brought on who have substituted ground transit for air transit, given polls and such, of people who have just decided not to fly because they didn't want to deal with the hassle, results in approximately 130 deaths every 3 months, which translates, if you do it back into the airline equivalent, of 4 fully loaded mm-hmm. Boeing 737s crashing every year. You know,
great.
In the end... Are you actually saving?
We're killing
anybody?
More people.
We're killing people
no.
by doing these things. You know, I'll give you another example of that kind of thing. That's in an unrelated thing where you know, people just have to think things through a little bit instead of reacting. You know, with instinct that's bad. And some other studies have been done, and I don't have the references because this was a few months ago. Some studies have been done that in areas that have passed laws saying that you can't. Text or talk on your cell phone in the car as you're driving.
Mm-hmm.
The death yeah. rate from distracted driving has actually gone up, not down. and the reason is people are not changing whether or not they're texting. The people who are going to text are going to text anyway, but they're holding their phones down lower so it can't be seen out the window. And that means their eyes are further from the road, which makes it more likely they're going to be in an accident, not less.
Hopefully it's a single car accident when they wind up getting themselves killed. So
not always.
We're eliminating.
Obviously not always. You know,
I said hopefully. I know that it isn't going to happen, damn it. But, you know, jeez.
I mean, the thing is with these kinds of things, it is 100%... You got to do the full cost-benefit analysis. You have to analyze what you're really doing. You can't just say, we've got to stop bombs from getting on the planes at all costs. Because, A, they're not actually doing that to begin with. Like, if they really wanted to be effective about that, they'd go all shitload further than they're actually going. And they do a lot more in a lot more areas.
It would take 10 hours to check in a plane every time, for heaven's sakes, if you want to do that, the airport would be a fortress, okay? Impenetrable. I mean, you'd have to check every fucking person. I mean,
and then someone would still blow up the area right outside the security checkpoint.
That's exactly right. Yes.
So all of these kinds of things that do, at best, they move the threat. They don't reduce the threat. And so, like, you know, you can actually reduce the threat by, like, some intelligence stuff, and some there are some things that can reduce the threat somewhat. But even then, you're never going to get the lone crazies, you know, ever. You know, they're always going to be lone crazies who aren't planning with other people who can get through whatever that don't care if they die themselves. You know, and so these things are, you know, when you do the analysis, it's insane. But then you get, you know, there have been representatives from the TSA, there's been Obama on, and they're you know, saying things along the lines of, we have to do this because we've seen the threat, and we have to be able to do this and detect this kind of stuff because blah, 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 blah. You know, all you're doing is moving threats around, and you're making lots of things worse. And you're doing it in such a way that is really, really hard to back off from. And that's why this stuff is ridiculous. Like, in isolation, really, I mean, who the fuck cares if there's an x-ray that, like, shows you naked? I mean, I understand why some people are pissed at that, but in the grand scheme of things, does that really matter? No. The pat-downs, that's a little bit more obnoxious, actually. And they intend it to be obnoxious, because they want you to go through the other machine. But in isolation, whatever. But where it comes into...
You'd volunteer to walk through naked through the security, the airport security.
Well, a number of people have said, you know, just make everybody fly naked and you're all set.
We won a hell of a trip, I tell you what.
But you know what? Even then, people will find ways to do what they need to do. You know, you're not going to stop everybody. Even if you did something like that, which obviously no one's going to do, but you know... It is just frustrating because, like, at least if there was evidence that this stuff actually made a freaking difference and was really saving lives, and then at least you could make some sort of argument. But all the evidence I've seen says this is costing lives. You know, maybe we've saved a plane or two from blowing up, but in the aggregate,
everybody loves these huge symbolic moves that don't fucking do absolutely anything to accomplish what they supposedly think they do, but still, anyway, for some reason, that's the shit that they focus on. It's like, you could go back to, like, crime bills that have been passed, for example, or, like, the fucking earmark ban, or all this shit. These fucking people, they do something that is just utterly symbolic in order to show, hey, look at me, I'm doing something for safety, even if it doesn't actually do anything, for crying out loud. It's just because it's the most obnoxious, and being able to fucking present the most and, like, be able to yell the most, they'll do it over doing actually something substantive to actually help anything. But, you know.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's discouraging. I'm actually, you know, somewhat heartened to see, you know, the amount of uproar that's happening this time. Although a number of people have mentioned, like, if you actually look at polls of the entire population, 80% or so are completely in favor of all this stuff. Because, you know, the actual percentage of people who flies that's upset about this is actually a relatively small percentage of the overall population. You know, and you know, people have noted as well that various people have been inconvenienced in much more dramatic ways by some of the security measures over the last, however many years. But one of the difference here is you've got middle to upper class, you know, white folks being inconvenienced this time, and so that makes a difference. We'll see. My hope is that this furor around this stuff continues to increase, and at some point people realize, oh shit, we have gone too far, this stuff doesn't make sense, let's cut back and do something much more reasonable.
But let me just say this.
I just want to say, what I expect is that this will die down over a couple weeks, we will have the new ratcheted up piece of security, and it will stay that way indefinitely until the next little terrorist event scares somebody, at which time it will get worse, not better. Anyway, go ahead.
I will say one thing. Even though I find the cost of the stupid naked scanner high, and I probably wouldn't have done it, honestly, all these people complaining about it, just walk through the fucking naked scanner. Jesus Christ, give me a fucking break. Seriously? I mean, while philosophically I am opposed to the fact that we spent the money on the stupid things, seriously, just walk through the fucking machine.
But getting
a pat down is better.
But that's the thing. If people just accept whatever comes on because it's the most convenient thing to do, then it's always going to get worse.
There's a different thing about, you know, here's my point is, you can complain about the fact that it doesn't make any sense to spend the money. It doesn't mean that you have to create a fucking ruckus at the airport or get fucking why in the world would you take the pat down over walking through the scanner? I mean, seriously. I mean, you know, what the fuck?
Well, the last thing I want is some
motherfucking guy really patting me down.
I will tell you the reason why, and then we should move on to the next topic. But the reason why is that philosophically you actually object to both. So the one you're going to do is the one that causes the system.
So then you have to refuse both.
No. Well, yes, but not fly. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to do that. But if you need to fly, what people are doing is picking the one that costs the most time and trouble to the system. And the pat downs take more time. They take more resources. So they're costlier for the people doing it. And so therefore, that's the choice to make if you're protesting, because. You know, the other ones, what they want to be the routine.
The other ones,
you know. And so the point of all of this is just like, you know, if everybody just says, oh, okay, that's the way it is, and they just do it, then, of course, it's not going to change. You know, the only time this stuff is ever going to start being reversed, and I don't know whether this is the time or not, but is when you get a significant portion of the flying public saying, you know, this is just fucking bullshit. And we're going to make it known every step it is.
Yeah, I guess. Okay, all right. You got a point. Okay.
Okay.
I'm fucking traveling. I'm just walking through the fucking naked scanner. I don't really give a fuck. I find that it's a stupid expense and I don't agree with it, but I'm sorry. I'm not going to fucking wait.
Well, you know, I'll tell you where I am at this point. First of all, you know, flying is not in my immediate future anyway, right now. My job does not require flying with the under 2-year-old. We're probably not going to fly anywhere on a vacation anytime soon. Not to mention the fact that given it's 4 people, it's more expensive than it used to be. But so flying is
that
not
is
in
just
my
ridiculous. Can I please tell you that I find that absolutely absurd and ridiculous, and you should go somewhere and take the baby.
Well, no, we would potentially do that, but like, you know, anyway, it's just, if we have to choose where to spend money, like all of, like when I was single, you know, I was going around all over the place on a fairly frequent basis. It costs 4 times as much when you got 4 people. Anyway.
Well, that's why you got married and have kids. That's part of the equation. Didn't they tell you that up front?
No, but but that's part of the equation. I'm traveling less. I'm traveling, but no. But my point is, if I were to go somewhere again, first of all, I definitely am more biased against air travel than I was before. So I'll tell you right now, my behavior, if I was going somewhere for fun, for vacation type stuff, you know, I would be biased to going to places within driving distance just to avoid the hassle and knowing I'm more likely to die in my car. But yes, I am going to be biased. I'm like, that's, you know, it's bullshit. It's whatever. Do I really want to deal with all that crap? Maybe I'll just drive to Idaho instead. You know, A. And B, if I was to go because I needed to for some reason, you know, I have to go somewhere for work or whatever, would I do the the thing or the pat down. I think, you know, really, for sort of these kinds of reasons I'm talking about, if I had time, if I was there plenty early, I might do the pat down just to make a point. If I was in a hurry, I'd just rush through the scanner and forget about it. You know, and not worry. You know, but anyway, we need to take a break. We'll be it's time for your poem of the week. So enjoy your poem, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Windows. We'll be right back.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
Red Gotham, by Matthew Hittinger. Am I the watchman? Am I the spy? Here in this museum, ich bin der Spion, and I watch the watchman watching. Sehen und gesehen. Does he watch me as I study this bed? Does he know ich bin der Spion? This bed is not a crime scene. That paint is not blood. It is the body's night sweat, the mind's leaked dreams, the mixed pigments of two men's brushes. Manchmal träume ich in Volendijk deutsche Stasi. When I wake, I translate them into fortune cookies and flags. This flag hangs across from the bed. Single object R meets single object J. This love letter of color between two found objects. This game is like an Adventskalender. Das Bett ist ein Tor und was verbirgt sich hinter dieser Tor. Behind door number one was the watchman. First watch or second, the spy watched him check his watch. Behind door number one, the watchman's shadow, but not the spy's. Wo ist der Spion? Wo ist der Spion? Bin ich? Behind door number one, a quilt without a bed, a flag without a nation, in caustic shadow city.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org, with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, and we're back. So, I don't know how much there is to say about this, really, but it was noted this week that it has been 25 years since the first 1.0 release of Windows. Certainly the product has come a long, long way. By all reports, Windows 1 and Windows 2 completely and totally sucked. The first time it got any traction whatsoever was Windows 3.1, actually, I believe.
I used Windows 1.0.
Did you?
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I did.
Tell us about it.
Well, I had a Tandy 2000 computer, okay? And at the time, the Tandy 2000 was... It ran DOS, okay? There was a special version that Bill Gates made of MS-DOS for it, okay? But most of the programs for Windows were incompatible because they used an 8186 processor, which at the time Intel built the 8186. It changed the architecture and made it different from the 8086, okay? So it wasn't directly compatible, but at the time they realized that in order to try to make a processor that was faster immediately, they needed to move away from the 8086, 8088 type of structure. So they built that processor. The problem is it didn't become very popular because a lot of people were complaining, well, what the fuck? It's not compatible with all the old software, whatever. You have to rewrite it. You have to recompile it, blah, 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 blah. So, but there was MS-DOS for it. Bill Gates actually liked the computer enough that he actually wanted the first versions of Windows 1.0 came out for that computer because it had more powerful graphics and everything than anything else that was out there. And I did get a copy of Windows 1.0 to use on that computer because, I don't know, I like to play with all the stuff that came out. And there weren't that many applications. Well, there were applications, but there wasn't like the same amount as there was for all the other computers out there. But I did get Windows 1.0, and it was clunky. It was dorky. I mean, but certainly compared to, you know, I didn't have a Mac at the time. Right. And compared to all the other stuff, which I actually had worked on Unix before, well, it was like, shit, you were like, it was like light years ahead. Plus, the fact that I had a really good computer with really good graphics and whatever made it that it did not run so bad. Okay, but you know, it was very simple and crude if you look at it compared to today. I mean, you couldn't really like overlap windows; they were kind of like tiled in front. It was, you know, I mean, it was interesting, but certainly not very. It wasn't great. I think I used it a little bit, and it was a little bit buggy and decided to hell with it. I'll just go back to the old way using the computer.
Anyway. And even in comparison, I mean, certainly in comparison to today, it's like whatever. But like even at, you know, even when it came out, you know, the Mac was already out at that point. This was the first attempt to imitate it. And early Macintoshes were fairly limited as well, obviously, by today's standards. They still
it was far better than Windows. It was, that's correct. Yes, it did. They did. So that was the one thing about it. I mean, I did use it for a little bit, but honestly, it was like, I was like, ah, pain in my ass. I was like, you know, whatever. I went back to just using the MS-DOS on it without the fucking graphical interface. It was just cute to use a little bit, but just not that great.
But you know, the thing to think about here is, I mean, 25 years is a long time for technology products. And fundamentally,
yes, it is.
Like, you know, lots of things that you expect sort of come and go, you know.
They do.
I mean, of the things I'm using today, how many of them existed 5 years ago or 10 years ago? Very, very few, you know, last that long, let alone 25 years. And both Windows and the Mac OS, although both of them have gone through, you know, extensive changes in that time period, you know, are still around and going strong. It's interesting to see that, you know. I mean, I'm not sure, you know, if you'd asked in, you know, when they first came out, do you think you'll still be running a version of this in 25 years? I'm not sure I would have thought you would, because, you know, changes go so quickly. But
let me ask you a question. Did you ever get a chance at Carnegie Mellon to actually use the Xerox computers with their graphical interface?
The Xerox ones.
You did not.
I remember using quite a few of the Unix workstations of various sorts, but I don't remember specifically any Xerox thing.
There weren't that many. They were in the psychology department, okay? In the psychology department, they actually had, you know, as everybody, I don't know if, well, not everybody knows, but just, you know, if you don't know, the basis of the original Apple
was from,
you know,
Xerox
operating
Park.
System, Windows, Macintosh, was from Xerox PARC. And I actually got to use over there as well at Carnegie Mellon, they actually, in the psychology department, they had 4 or 6 Xerox PARC workstations. Okay, all right. I can't remember the exact model with the graphical Xerox operating system and everything. Okay, as well. I will tell you this, that those definitely ran a lot better. I was shocked by how nice they were. Okay, because they actually ran better than some of the other stuff that we use, but obviously Xerox got out of that business. They stopped making all the stuff and whatever. But I will tell you that I was actually very impressed with how mature, and certainly a lot better than Windows 1.0, to be honest with you, was definitely the Xerox stuff. But anyway.
Well, you know, I did use the Next machines there.
I did use the Next machines too. I remember those. Those were, I always thought they were kind of, I don't know, the interface was kind of weird. That's what I thought.
Yeah, well,
plus,
you know,
there wasn't that much you could do on them anyway.
There wasn't that much. I mean, I checked my mail and did a couple other things, but like, you know, the dock that's in Mac OS X came from there, and the spinning wheel of death came from there as well. It's one of the most noticeable remnants of Next in the current Macs is the little spinning wheel when things get locked up. But anyway, I don't know. It's just interesting to note. It's been a long time, and certainly, yeah. I've seen the latest Windows. I have not used it in person. I just have no need to use Windows on a regular basis anymore. But from all reports, it's much, much, much nicer than.
It works really good. I have we have a number of computers right now that I have running Windows 7. That I use regularly, and gosh, my God, definitely much better than XP or Vista by eons. So yeah, it is pretty good.
They finally caught up and did something decent. Yeah. So
yes, they did. I should
mention real quick before we wrap up this segment. There was also a bit of a hubbub here. I have if we ever actually bother getting married, it'll my mother-in-law is here visiting this week. And so we've been going around doing a variety of things, but there has been Microsoft has been making a bit of a hubbub here in Bellevue, Washington. They've opened their latest Microsoft Store in the mall here in Bellevue, like, you know, 100 feet down the hall from the Apple Store.
Okay.
And so they had their big opening shindigs this week.
Did the store crash or something?
No, in going about our activities, we've sort of run into these things whether we wanted to or not. So, like, let me give you examples of the kinds of things they've done. Now, I just want to compare, by the way. I don't mean this as a denigrating comparison, but I just want to point this out. Apple opens a new Apple Store almost anywhere in the world, and they've got lines outside waiting to get in. They announce a new product, they've got lines waiting to get in. Microsoft opens their store, they got tons and tons of crowds. But here's what they did to get them. So first of all,
they let all their employees out early or something.
No. Well, that would they probably did. I don't know, but no, because they got like tons of employees right around. But
that's what I mean.
No. First thing on opening day. The first 2,000 people to go to the Microsoft Store would get tickets to a Miley Cyrus concert.
Oh, fuck. Well, wait a minute. What the hell has that got anything to do with the damn store?
Well,
I would think get a free Zune or get a free, I don't know, something.
But
I guess nobody wants any
Zune.
Of those things. So exactly. So therefore, they have to give something completely unrelated to the store.
So of course, they're sponsoring this concert. So, like, there are people lined up overnight. Now, by people, I mean 13-year-old girls.
Younger,
12 or 11-year-old girls, actually.
Right. Oh, dear God.
Like, lined up in front of the Apple Store to get their Miley Cyrus tickets on...
Microsoft Store.
At the Microsoft Store. And so there are big crowds waiting for that. And then, and of course, they had a big thing where Ballmer, you know, cut the ribbon to the store and gave a little speech. And you can probably find it on YouTube. I watched it on YouTube, and it was kind of amusing. Because, you know, he's yelling, and anyway.
That's what I figured. I was wondering how much yelling was he doing at
They interviewed a number of people, waiting in line to go over to opening of the store. And they're like, so why are you here? And they're like, Miley! And they're like, well, what about Microsoft stuff? Are you looking at a Zune or anything? And they're like, oh, no, but next month I'm getting an iPad, you know.
And then
the next thing was the next afternoon or that afternoon, I guess, and something they did not announce until a few hours before it happened. Dave Matthews Band gave a concert at the store itself, you know, or right outside the store or something like that. So there were, you know, I had stayed home for something, but the rest of the family went to the mall just to go to the mall, and they're like, there's a concert, you know, at the Microsoft Store. And then they had, the next day, they had the actual Miley Cyrus concert, which was like across the street somewhere. It wasn't at the store itself, but there were huge, huge crowds there for that. And so now I will find it interesting to see next time I go, you know, to the Apple Store, which will actually probably be this afternoon, you know, is there anybody at the Microsoft Store? So we'll see. I'll report on that next week. I just thought that was amusing. So.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I'll look at the video, but I guess there isn't anything like they launched that Windows 7 phone for. I mean, that new Windows. Yeah, because it is Windows a mobile 7 version phone, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
My thing about it that I don't understand is, have you seen the ads?
No.
For it.
I have not seen
it
yet.
Well, the one thing about it is that the ad is, it will change telephony as you know it. And I'm like, really? How? What? What is it, holographic? The one thing is it talks about it, but I've seen the reviews, and honestly, there's nothing earth-shattering about the phone.
Well, I found it interesting, and I found it interesting that their primary pitch, I have not seen the ads, but I've heard about them, is sort of the get on the phone, get what you want, get off. You know, and sort of they're making fun of the people who spend, you know, lots and lots of time on their phones doing various things. And
so what? Apparently the people who get a Windows 7 phone are going to be so frustrated by how it doesn't work that they'll not use it at all, so therefore they won't spend any time on the phone? I'm wondering what the hell promotion is this for a phone?
You know, their idea is it makes it really easy for you to go in, get your email or whatever, and then be done. And I'm like, okay, it cannot be missing the point any further. You know, look, the people who really want, you know, the simplicity and just get in, get out, whatever, you know, they don't need to get, like, a few weeks back we were talking about the ability to get the just a phone, you know. Those people want the just a phone, you know. The people who want a smartphone want to do stuff with their smartphone. Want to do...
That's why they get a fucking smartphone!
You know, I could see the idea of a machine that just lets you quickly check your email and you know, maybe Facebook or something. But, you know, I don't know. I see them getting I give them something for trying to take a different tack. They sort of said, look, we're not going to, you know, we've already got iPhone, we've already got Android. It doesn't necessarily make sense for us to position this as a third equivalent to those things. We're going to try to go in a different direction. But I'm not sure their different direction that they've chosen is a really viable one. I mean, I guess time will tell.
So different anyway. I mean, I guess my point was that if you're going to advertise something like that, you know, there's got to be some meat behind it. And there's certainly is none of that based on what I can see. I mean, I saw the phone the other day. It looks a lot better than their old phones. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's certainly a huge leap over the shit that they sold before. Believe me, because I had to use it like for a long time. I'm fucking one of the, you know, I think that I had a friend of mine. I still have some friends of mine at HP that use the phones. And I saw them with the latest version before this one. And we were talking about, you know, so how's the phone? And I saw they got the new phone, the latest version, the 6.5. It's called the Glizzen or something like that. I said, so how much better is this than the first phone? Well, I said, well, let me go you through a history of the HP phones that I had, okay, with Windows. The first one basically didn't work, period. I mean, it was just, you know what? You couldn't even make a fucking call. On the second one, you could make a call, but by the way, you had a lot of difficulty hanging up the phone. And I'm not exaggerating this. This happened to me. You kept hitting the end button and the call wouldn't end. Okay? And it happened to me once that I got pissed off. I was pissed off at somebody and it happened to them that you were like, "Go, I'm going to call," and you wanted to hang up and you thought you hit end and you thought you hung up and you were cursing. And unfortunately, you started cursing before the fucking call if ended. Okay? All right? So after that, I had to make sure I hit and, you know, and I'm like, oh, okay, finally, the call ended. And the battery life was like 5 hours, okay? And I'm not making it up. It was 5 hours. The third phone, the battery life was longer, and you could make an end of call. However, at random moments, if you got a call coming in, the phone's reaction was to crash, okay? Phone call came in, crash. Okay? And it's like you had to take the battery out because there's no way of really resetting a phone. I'm talking about a full hard crash. Only way to fucking get the thing to work back up is to fucking take the battery out. That was a common thing. Okay? It was like, you know, so we moved from not being able to barely make a call to being able to make a call to not end it to, okay, getting calls or whatever to crashing to where now he said, the only problem the phone has right now is that it randomly resets itself. Okay? Just at random. It's just sitting there, and it'll just reboot. So, progress, I guess. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Microsoft phones for you. All right. Let's go. Let's move on to something else. What you'd say.
Okay. Let's take a break. We'll be right back, and we'll try to compress some of our remaining topics into a quick last segment. We'll be right back after this break. Bring me the elephant on the stick.
Thank you for using your conference account information.
Okay, Vaughn, we're back, and we took like a huge amount of time on those last couple of things. So we had scheduled, talking about the Pope condoms and Facebook mail. We probably only really have time for one of those unless we go really fast. So which one do you want?
Pope condoms?
Pope condoms. Okay, I don't know there's a huge amount to say here either, but, the Roman Catholic Church has forever, essentially, had as their official policy, basically the bottom line is, the purpose of sex is reproduction, and anything you do to prevent reproduction from happening is bad. And, of course, or to have, sexual pleasure in any way that is not related to reproduction. So that results in a few things. One, Yvonne and I spoke, and Yvonne didn't believe until he checked it out that there's strictures against masturbation because you're not actually, trying to make a baby there. There's strictures against any and all forms of birth control because you are trying to keep from making a baby. Third, any sort of gay sex or anything along those lines also out the door because you're not trying to make a baby. And in specific, the Catholic Church has been criticized worldwide as being counterproductive in the fight against AIDS because the big push there has been use condoms, use condoms, use condoms, use condoms. Has been the most effective technique against the spread of AIDS worldwide, has been encouraging the wider spread use of condoms. Especially in parts of Africa and Asia where the epidemic has been at levels completely unheard of in like the United States. Those kinds of programs have made a big difference. The Catholic Church has at best refused to endorse them and at worst has repeated its anti-condom line. So the Pope apparently this last week did an interview somewhere where somebody asked him about condoms. And he said, well, in some circumstances, maybe they'd be okay. For instance, if somebody is seeing a gay prostitute.
I saw that and I was like, I didn't know what the fuck. I'm like, what? Wait a minute. If somebody is seeing it, wait a minute. Okay. All right. And I'm like, okay, back it up a second. Now. The whole thing is that they're, first of all, the church frowns on gays, so they frown on gay sex.
Yes.
So how could it be okay to use a condom during something you should – my point isn't that what he said is correct in the actual terms. My point is how the fuck does he justify saying that when he's saying he's against everything else?
So, and I'd say, one of the things that's interesting here is it actually admits to, and I'm cribbing off some stuff Andrew Sullivan said about this, if I can look it up, I'm not sure I can, this allows sort of gradations in morality. Which it says, where the line is sort of like, well, okay, sex outside of marriage is bad, but if you're going to have sex out of marriage, let's start with this example. Gay sex is bad, and prostitution is bad, but if you're going to go there, you might as well help not spread disease. And so maybe it's better to do it with a condom than without if you're going to do it anyway. But like you said, the Catholic Church model in the past on these kinds of issues is to say there's no point talking about what you should do if you are going to have gay sex because you shouldn't
because
be, having,
you shouldn't
it
be having it in the first place.
And sort of the equivalent being, let's not talk about the right way and the wrong way to murder people. Just don't murder people. It's sort of the same kind of argument. But, you know, this is admitting to the idea that even if you think X is wrong, then there might still be gradations in wrongness if you're going to do that thing in terms of different ways you do that thing. And
But you see, the Catholic Church has never actually accepted that that exists.
Yeah. Everything's always been black and white, right?
That's exactly right.
And so this is a change, you know, of sorts. Now there's
a change. I mean, this is like, I don't, you know, a change. This is like, you know, this is, I mean, I don't know. This is like declaring the world's not flat anymore.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, yes. And the Catholic Church at one point did that.
Yes, they did.
You know.
Yes, they did. That's why I brought it up.
But you know, look. I mean, I think the rest of the world outside and I'd say the vast majority of Catholics as well. By the way, you know, have long ago accepted the idea that, you know, there are gradations, and it's not just things that are wrong and things that are right, but there are, you know. You know, there. If you're going to do something that is frowned upon, there are still better ways and worse ways of doing it. Now, of course, lots of people these days, including myself, would argue there's nothing wrong with any of these things to begin with. You know, if you want to have gay sex, go for it. It's all well and good. If you want to masturbate, you know, excellent. You know, etc.
Jerk off, baby.
sex before marriage, fine. Birth control,
fine.
Excellent. But you know, even if you accept the idea that some of these things are "quote unquote" wrong, I think the idea that, you know, the circumstances matter somewhat, and what the alternative is matters somewhat, and you know, if there are two things that are "quote unquote" wrong, one of them can be more wrong than the other, you know, and so it's interesting to see him going there. Now, of course, I think his office has sort of backed off a little bit since then. We'll see. Of course, now, since then, you know, there have been a lot of jokes on the internet of saying, you know, of course the Pope thinks it's okay with male prostitutes because that's what he does. You know, but...
Well, by the way, wait. That's not... I'm not going to say that he specifically does that, but unfortunately, that's what I know a lot of priests have done.
Yeah.
Okay, which is why, for example, the principal of my Catholic high school when I was in Puerto Rico died of AIDS.
Yeah, so, anyway, we'll see. I mean, like, you know, but anyway, so...
Who was a priest, by the way? Let me correct. The priest who was a principal my Catholic high school died of AIDS. Okay, and according to what I was able to gather from the other guys in religious order, they kind of admitted that yeah, he was, you know, fucking male prostitutes.
Well, you know, because anyway, you know, the whole thing with the sort of self repression of folks in that profession, you know, for the celibacy vow, the anti-gay stuff. I mean, you end up with lots and lots of deeply closeted gays in that kind of role, because and you get all kinds of difficulties coming out of that with people, you know, being hypocritical, having, you know, not liking themselves, having all sorts of issues. And it's like, why do you do this to people? You know, it's just, anyway, but, you know, I have my problems with religion in general. I get, but when you have when it's highly restrictive, you can't do this, you can't do that, it's evil to do this, it's evil to do that, with all kinds of things like that, and in roles like the priesthood where they voluntarily restrict themselves even more, it seems like you're just asking for something that damages people's psyches and makes them less healthy and stable as they would otherwise. And you've got to wonder how many lives this has destroyed. But anyway.
A lot.
Anyway, I just wanted to point out the article I was mentioning from Andrew Sullivan, The Daily Dish, posted November 20th, 2:45 in the afternoon. The title is The Pope and the Male HIV Positive Prostitute. He's got, you know, a little article about that worth reading. It starts out with, he really should be more careful. When pressed on the church's absolute prohibition of condoms and asked if there could be an exception, His Holiness thought of male prostitutes for some reason. And then he talks about sort of what we were talking about. Like I said, I cribbed it for him, where it's sort of the stair-stepping of, you know, if these are okay, then how about this? And, you know, maybe it's not okay, but maybe it's better than that. And how sort of through that logic you get to sort of where everybody else in the universe is, but it's a brand new place for, you know, the Pope and the Catholic Church, according to, you know, a lot of the doctrine, official doctrine. And like I said, you know, official doctrine and where the vast majority of people who call themselves Catholics are probably widely different, especially in the United States, but even elsewhere. Anyway, we are out of time. We didn't talk about Facebook mail.
Hold it for next week.
Talk about it at all. My bottom line on it is that I thought they had the opportunity to do something really disruptive and interesting, but they didn't. So anyway, that's it. Thank you all.
By the way, that's a pretty good short summary. I like it.
Yeah. So anyway, that's it for Curmudgeon's Corner for this week. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, thoughts, you know, whatever. And tell your friends to listen. And we'll be talking to you all next week. Tune in. See you then. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.